And this is officially Zen Talk number 40.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. I think everybody that's on knows the routine, but if you have a question, raise your hand, like physically, or put it in the chat box, or there's even something in the box itself that allows you to raise your hand. So I'm going to start just to kind of warm everybody up and ask a question that one of our listeners asked. But first I'm going to...
Is this from the Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay.
This is from Kelly. Oh, first, there are some people that live on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot going on with Hurricane Florence.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to send our best wishes and positive vibes to everybody on the East Coast, because I know we have a lot of people on the East Coast.
Yeah. We've been including you in all of our thoughts and prayers for the last 2 or 3 days, just reading about it. So
hopefully it won't be as bad as what some people might think.
Yeah.
Who knows? So we're sending you loving thoughts.
Even when people have to leave, which they've moved people out, which is so hard. But I'd rather that happen and then you come back to a safe place. And my hope is that nothing does happen, but that we're erring on the safe side. So
that's right.
So we got
So with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and talk about our first question, which is tricky, I think. And you kind of had a little back and forth with Kelly who asked this.
Yes.
But I'm going to read it for everybody's ears.
Can you paraphrase it?
No,
it's long.
I like to read it. How do you talk to a five-year-old about calling someone fat? About a month ago, she told me, it's okay to say someone's fat as long as it's not them, Mom. And then, so this is a five-year-old.
Okay.
And then proceeded to tell me how after my daughter's aunt dropped her off at school, her friend said the aunt's arms are really fat, and they talked about it after Aunt C was gone. I explained that it wasn't okay even when they weren't there. There are lots of reasons that people are all different sizes, and what is on the inside is what matters, and it can hurt someone's feelings if they can found out you were calling them fat, even if they weren't there. I even offered what she can respond to her friend next time. For example, I love Aunt C, just as she is. She gives great hugs and plays with me. To follow this up, my daughter has now called me fat twice. Once she said it offhand, that's why you're super fat, at bedtime when she was acting out. I ignored it. Then Friday at bedtime when we were watching a video on a Girl Scout song, I wanted to teach her, and she said the girls in the video were fat and then proceeded to tell me I'm kind of just a little bit fat, but not really. I got to tell you, it stung. I had the illusion that your own children won't notice if you're not the skinniest mom out there. I worry that she'll pick up on my internal reaction and will make it more exciting to say. I want to not only create a healthy body image for her, but help her accept others as they are. I make it a point to never say anything about my body or losing weight in front of her, and have had conversations with my mom when she's made comments in the past, and she's not big at all. Where do I take this conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Tricky.
Yeah, it is. It is. The thing that I wrote on Facebook that I will repeat and then we'll continue on with this discussion is that we have to remember that kids, especially kids who are five, are hearing words they're kind of learning how to use words and the power of words and the energy of words. That's usually around the time that they maybe pick up a swear word or two and they recognize how it makes people react. And so this is a word that in our society carries a lot of energy. And so for her, she doesn't have all the history, baggage, societal understanding of how that word is used to hurt people. She's for the first time just understanding the energy behind it. She's trying it out. She's like throwing it out there, seeing how people react to it. And obviously it's bringing a big reaction. I'm saying that because it doesn't, like, your daughter using this word doesn't mean she's inherently mean, mm-hmm. or that she's inherently trying to, that she's like, I'm going to harm people, or that she really sits around thinking about your body, because she doesn't.
Is it kind of like when kids learn to hit for the first time?
Of course.
They're just trying this out. So we have all this understanding, emotion built up with this word.
Yeah.
This is her first, her? 5-year-old.
Yeah, it's her daughter.
Yeah, this is her first time.
And especially with a girl, because we're so concerned raising girls not only to be thoughtful about how we talk about our body, but we want to raise our girls to be thoughtful about their own self-perception. And sometimes we hold on a little too tight around it, meaning that we don't even discuss you know, we don't even allow some room to recognize differences in bodies. Now, of course, when we're recognizing differences in bodies, it doesn't mean one's better than the other. It's just, I like what Kelly said about, you know, we're all built differently, you know, and kind of normalizing that we're not all supposed to look the same. That's wonderful. But I think that because she's now using it, kind of she's weaponized it a little bit because she knows how you react to it. I think I would really either sit down with her before she uses it again or next time she uses it and simply say, listen, and again, it Kelly, for you, because it kind of, it stung and it's shocking to you, you know, you'll have to kind of take a deep breath and try and be present with her around this and not do this from an angry place. But is to say, listen, when you use that word to try and hurt me with it, I want you to understand how, you know, what that sounds like. It feels like you are trying to, you know, say that you want to hurt me. It feels like you are trying to point out that I look a certain way that you don't, you know, like trying to engage her in a conversation about what her intention is. And again, you know, I wish I had an exact situation because then I could kind of come up with the words to, you know, to start it. But I kind of think it's, and again, I don't want to say this isn't a big deal. That's not what I want to say, but it's not.
It's probably not as big of a deal. She's probably fast forwarding a little
correct.
Bit.
Correct. That's a good way to say it, Todd, is that really in this moment for a 5-year-old to use that word, it's
completely
not
normal.
Yeah. And the fear is, what will this mean? What does this mean about her? What is she saying about me? Because even Kelly said, I didn't think she noticed my body. Of course our children notice our bodies.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean, you know, they're not blind to the world and seeing the differences in our body, but it doesn't mean they love us less.
Mm-hmm.
It right. doesn't mean that they're offended by us or ashamed of us.
Mm-hmm.
It just means they notice our bodies. And that is, you know, how do we feel in our body
yes.
is the key. Because, you know, I always think about a few of my girlfriends who maybe, like, I had a girlfriend who in high school, and I had a few girlfriends in college, and then one girlfriend that I used to work with at Children's, and they were all like bigger built, like athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And they
did not fit the mold of what's on the Cosmo cover, but my God, they were strong.
They were gorgeous and strong, and they owned their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so my reaction to them and their beauty and their sexuality and all those kind of things was how they carried themselves and their like ownership of who they were. That's where it comes from. It's not about lecturing our kids about, you know, don't notice this or don't see this, but like, how do we take who we are and what we have and own it? That's the conversation, because pretending, saying, oh, no, everybody's, you know, everybody's beautiful and everybody, they are internally, but we can't deny that there are societal norms.
Mm-hmm.
There are. We see them on TV all the time. We see, and so that's the language I use with the girls most of the time is, yeah, that's the societal norm.
It's,
you know,
and it's a little bit early to do this, but there's so many good videos and resources on what the society says is beautiful and then how fake
mm-hmm.
those girls actually are. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, you mean
the makeup
like the,
one.
Yeah. Yeah, the Dove commercials.
Yeah, it's a little
yeah.
too early to show that to a 5-year-old, but for anybody who has older kids.
What is it?
I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put that in the, maybe I'll find it and put it in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
If not, it'll be in the show notes. And then the one thing I would say to Kelly is that when this happens again, which it probably will, I would just encourage her to make sure that she proclaims to her daughter how much she loves her own body. And
mm-hmm.
I know she's doing that. It sounds like, you know, because there's a lot of moms out there that are always trying to diet and they focus on the numbers and the weight and the scale. It doesn't sound like Kelly's doing
mm-hmm.
that at all. So she's already doing a lot of the
right.
stuff that we would agree with.
And you know what? Maybe saying, it sounds like you're trying to use that word to, again, the word provoke is too big for a 5-year-old, but it sounds like you're trying to get me in some way. It sounds like you're trying to engage me in an argument, or it sounds like you're trying to use that word to hurt. Are you trying to use that word to hurt? That's probably what I was trying to say before, is like bringing up that conversation of how you're using it. So there's like many different levels to this question. Number one, again, our children are our mirrors, and you know, Kelly and all of us, this is not just for Kelly, but if our children were to come up to us and say, hey, you have 3 arms, we wouldn't be offended by it because
right.
we don't have 3 arms. But when our children come up to us and say, hey, you're fat,
yeah. It triggers your whole history, exactly. Your whole emotion. So
that's coming from inside of us.
Yes,
that's not something she's imposing on us. That's coming from inside of us. And so it's remembering our own feelings about that. And then the second thing, or you're bald.
Exactly. Scott just typed in, or you're bald, which is great. Bald is beautiful.
It is. Imagine if Scott was like, no, I'm not. I'm not. What proof do you have? And then Scott, then you would have to show your children, which I'm sure they've seen pictures from college when your hair was long and beautiful. And I'm sure you've showed them. So, you know, this is the thing is that all these things do is bring about a great conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of my child is mean, right, or this means she's going down the wrong path. It's just a door open to another word. I've written, like when my kids were little, when they started trying out swear words and when they started trying out, you know, like calling each other names, and, you know, it sucks in the moment. It's not like I'm like, ooh, this is wonderful. But all it does is just open that door.
Well, and I would just say that when we do have these opportunities to respond to our kids in this situation, just keep it short and simple and easy and confident.
I struggle with that. Not necessarily the confident part, but I'm not always short and simple.
Sweetie doesn't know how to compress language at all.
I'm like, let's all sit down and talk about this for a long time.
All right.
And so my girls have come, they've gotten good at saying, okay, I got it.
So there's two Jennifers and one says that they want to share something. I think it's the Jennifer that is doing this right now. Is that the right Jennifer?
No, wrong Jennifer.
Oh, it's the other Jennifer. I don't know how to identify it. But forget it.
There you go.
We just figured it out. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, guys. First, I wanted to say how grateful I am for all of you, because I really look forward to this time together, and I see all your friendly faces, and I know that this is a place where I can come for support and non-judgment. And I'm not going to talk about this one issue today, but I'm going through something really hard right now, and I'm not ready to talk about it, but I know that when I am, I can come to all of you guys. So thank you all very much. So I actually have two issues, but I don't know if we'll have time for both. So I'll just start with one. Not this past week's podcast, but the one before, when you had Devorah Heitner on and you were talking about you know, video games and kids and stuff. So I've been dealing with the device issue for a long time with my kids. And in the beginning, I wanted to just shut it all down. And I realized that over time that wasn't a good idea, that all this technology is here to stay. So how do I comfortably balance what's out in the world with my value system as a parent? And it's been really hard. And I guess the issue that keeps coming up for me is, so for example, on Fortnite, so I have three boys, and from day one, I've said we don't play shooting games in our house because there's plenty of other games to play where we're not harming other people. This is a game that harms people. And when my kids have friends over and I start talking to them about it, and I don't say it in a judgmental way, but I'll just say like, hey, you know, what's up with this Fortnite game? And so they're like, oh, you gotta, you know, build your arsenal and get your skins and you can buy stuff and you can this and that. I'm like, yeah, but really, like, what's the point of the game? And they're like, well, to get all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, but what are you doing in the end? They're like, well, you want to be the last man standing. And I said, all right, so if you're going to be the last man standing, what do you have to do? Oh, you have to kill everybody else. So I think the problem that I'm having, and I am like worked up in an anxiety state in general right now, but I feel like the problem I'm having is that when we talk about these devices, we kind of gloss over the deeper issues of exactly what our kids are doing. So my twins, who are 11, every single 11-year-old boy in their grade plays Fortnite. They all go home, they get on their headsets, and they all play with each other. So my boys are left out. And people say to me, well, isn't that bad? All the kids are playing this, you don't want them to stand out. And I really don't have a problem with any of that, because hopefully one day they'll understand it. But when we look at the deeper issue, and not even in terms of a gun control issue, but can't we do better for our kids than having millions of kids, especially young kids? Because really what they did was they took things like Grand Theft Auto, Assassin's Creed, all that kind of stuff. All that's rated mature. So technically a young kid shouldn't be playing it, but also can't purchase it. But now they made Fortnite teen. So you have teens that can buy it and play it. And obviously there's really young kids that are playing it as well. So we've kind of backdoored a shooting game by making it seem cartoonish and, you know, hiding behind these ideas of, oh, it teaches them strategy, it teaches them team building, it teaches them how to work together. And it's driving me crazy because I feel like we can do so much better than this kind of game. And why has like every single, I shouldn't say every single, so many parents, I feel like, have kind of, and this is going to sound really judgmental, and I said that I like that you guys don't judge me, but now I'm judging people. But like when we all step back and we see these boys going home every day after school and playing these games, I mean, my boys ride over to their houses and say, you want to come out and play? And they say, no, we're playing Fortnite. And the other thing about it that drives me crazy is that the kind of stuff that's discussed by these young boys and the words they use, they're swearing, they're using the N-word, they're talking really harshly to each other, and they're spending hours and hours and hours of doing this. So if we're talking about young children and their brain development and blazing pathways, like, this isn't a game that teaches compassion or kindness or love or just, you know, basic human interaction. So I am fine with the line in the sand that I've drawn with my kids, and they understand it. We've talked openly about it. I said, listen, this is a line that it's never going to change. But how can we have these discussions about balance and living in our kids' worlds and understanding what they like to play and not have some kind of guidelines around it? We know that the games are really addictive. We know they're designed to addict. And how do we not, we always talk about, I guess here are the two main issues. We always talk about the developing brain. We always talk about especially the teenage brain. And everyone, you know, we talk about drugs and alcohol, and if kids can make it to a certain age before being exposed to nicotine, to alcohol, to whatever drug, that they're less likely to be addicted as adults to any substance. But these devices and these games were designed with neurologists to light up that exact part of the brain that feeds addiction. So, sorry I'm getting so worked up. But I am really worked up because I don't understand why, as a society, we're not stepping back and thinking, can't we have balance in a way? You know, we go out and, you know, we do these marches. We talk about how horrible it is that these school shootings are happening. And I'm not saying there's even any link between video games, violent video games, and the school shootings. But can't we do better than having, especially our boys, playing these games? Like, I'm really frustrated. So I want to throw it out to you guys because I feel like I'm losing my mind a little and I'm trying to be balanced. And one last thing. So we talk about mindfulness, right? Sorry, I'm going off. We talk about mindfulness. And we talk about, you know, teaching our kids to step back and think about things. Like, these devices are the total opposite of mindfulness. You have adults that are addicted, and now you have children. It's so much easier for them to reach for these devices that were intended to addict them. Like, isn't there some kind of responsibility by the adults to say, this is going to harm children in the long run because we should be filling their brains with wonderful things and at least fun stuff? And so, all right, I think I'll end it there. But one last thing, I'll say one last thing. Mr. Rogers, I haven't watched the documentary yet, but I did listen to this podcast called In Real Life. And it was all about Mr. Rogers. And this kid had written a letter to Mr. Rogers and had asked him to go to the Ghirardelli chocolate factory and to do an episode on that. And Mr. Rogers wrote back saying, no, we're not going to do that because we don't want to promote kids eating candy. And the kid was really pissed off because he thought that it was a jerk move by Mr. Rogers. So they were talking about this in the podcast, but one of the researchers from Harvard said that Mr. Rogers hated the concept of anyone making money off of children. that he would never put his likeness on diapers or cereal boxes or anything like that. And that when Burger King tried to use like a King parody of Mr. Rogers, he shut it down because he's like, you can't do that. So, you know, how are these games, these games any different? Like, they're making tons and tons of money on the back of children. So anyway, sorry, I'm on my soapbox. And if I'm sounding self-righteous, I just had to get it out because I'm going crazy. So thank you guys. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to mute you. And I have a few things and my sweetie's going to go.
Sure, go ahead.
First of all, I'm glad that we, I just want to give you a platform and space to be able to get all that out because I think that might help. So, and obviously your intention is nothing but love and kindness and compassion for our world. So I think everything you're experienced, I would be surprised if not everybody that's on Team Zen at least has some of what you just said inside of them. Mm-hmm. So basically you're speaking for all of us when you're speaking for yourself. So that's the first thing. I do want to challenge you a little bit is you speak a lot about in terms of absolutes, like kids are always, or this is ruining our society. And there is, while there's a lot of negative out there, there's also a lot of positive out there. So I would just maybe question your language a little bit because there are no absolutes. And I'm guessing that if I went back and listened to your language again,
yeah, I'd she's just trying to make her point. She's not saying always.
Right. But,
yeah.
But that's important. And then, we talked about Byron Katie's work. I would invite you to go through the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. And I'm sure you can find somebody on Team Zen to go through that with, because this is really, of course, it's about society and corporations making money off kids, but there's also, we have to own a little bit of ourselves in this. And that is a tool that you can tap into possibly to kind of maybe shift your perspective a little bit on what's going on. And then the last thing is, you know, can't we do better as a society and all that? Like,
of course
we can, yes. But the only thing we have any control over is ourselves. And I honor the fact that you are not letting Fortnite in your house because that's the right decision for you and your family. And I want to honor that, support that. While at the same time, the only thing you have control over is how you deal with your energy and how you interact with your children. The minute that we kind of like, can't we all do better? Like it's such a huge problem. There's no way out of that. So I would just encourage you to just be the best version of yourself and be as kind and compassionate to not just your sons, but your son's friends who,
which she is.
Right.
Yeah. I just want to make sure she's not hearing like you've got a problem.
No,
yeah.
I don't think Jennifer has a problem,
no.
But I do think that the only problem Jennifer has is she's not going to be able to change society.
Correct.
So I want Jennifer to make sure that she puts this fiery energy into herself.
Yes.
And how she interacts.
Or like puts it out in the world. Like, so first of all, yes. Yes to everything Todd said. And one thing that, is really helpful to me, Jennifer, when I feel the way you do, because I often do. And Todd, the reason he's probably responding in this way is I say things like this to him all the time. You know, why is this happening? Why are people saying this? Why are people doing this? I have moments of where I get, and this is part of my own, just kind of my own makeup or spiritual awareness. I honestly don't get it sometimes. I literally can't understand. Like, I can't find it in myself. Why would people do this? Why would people be okay with this? So I get into that place a lot. And I don't think it's a bad place. I think it's a place of seeing things clearly and going, what the hell's going on? You know, why is this what we're selling to kids? It's why, you know, you brought up Mr. Rogers, you know, it's why he's one of my heroes, because he was actually someone who said, not only am I not going to make any money off the backs of children, but I'm going to actually do something to remind children they're special. Right. And there's not a lot of people like him. That's why I shouldn't say that. There's a ton of people like him. There's not a lot of people like him on TV. This is what I want to share that's been, that's helpful. Remember, because neuropsychologists and psychologists do work for TV stations and radio stations and everything, and they do know what makes us addicted. Remember that sex and violence sells. And sex and violence are the things that people will buy and people will experience and people will look at. It's what gains eyeballs. And that's just human. That's not because people suck. It's because that's what we're hardwired to look at. That, I know that that doesn't, that's not like, okay, so we're fine with it, but it will make sense to you. Like, for example, with all the talking that I do about, I don't love these video games either. I do a lot of work to move away from that. I try and put things out in the world that are positive. You want to know what I said to Todd yesterday morning? I said, guess what movie we're going to next week? And he said, what? And I said, we're going to go see the new Halloween movie. And my kids are like, you won't go. You won't go.
Because she hasn't gone to a horror movie. She's seen one at a movie theater in the last 20 years.
I haven't seen a horror movie in, I don't know, since Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Why I'm saying that is there's a human part of me, too, that saw the first Halloween when I was in seventh grade, and I would like to see Laurie Strode kick this guy's butt, okay? I would like to see this.
Nobody knows who Laurie Strode is.
Yes, it's Jamie Lee Curtis.
Just say
you
Jamie
guys know
Lee.
Me. Well,
just say Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Does anybody else know who Laurie Strode is? Raise their hand. I didn't think so.
Hey, a few Jennifer. People did. Oh, okay. My point in telling that story is that even there's a part of me that wants to, like, there's a human part of me that wants to see this, too. Not the gore. I'll close my eyes for it. I don't need all that crap. But there is, all of us have, we're multidimensional. And I don't want to spend my whole day playing a game where I'm shooting people. And I don't want my kids doing that either. Nor am I thinking it's a good thing. You know, like I went to school at the Parent Coaching Institute 10, 12 years ago. They have a graduate certification program. And the woman who started the parent coaching certification program, she's been all over this stuff for years, way before people started talking about it. She wrote a book called Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill. She has been on all the news stations talking about how this violence is harming our kids, how some of the first school shooters were actually able to harm as many people as they did because of the video games they played. So Jennifer, in answer to your question, yes, there is a connection. There, you know, the video games can serve sometimes as a, what's a word where you get into like a, you're pretending to drive a plane, but you're not really driving
simulator?
The plane. If they're simulators for learning how to shoot. So that there is some truth to all this. At the same time, there's a normalcy to it because we grew up killing space invaders. And we grew up, and my parents grew up watching cowboys and Indians shoot each other.
Yeah,
and there's this pattern.
Yeah.
Behavior.
Well, and we, you know, I don't know. There's some absolute truth to the details and how these games are made differently than they were when we were little
Correct.
Kids. But I grew up playing shooting games.
Yeah.
So you could say, well, yeah, but it's different because it's more graphic. And while that's all true, I was still, you know, we played Space Battle, we played Sea Battle, and we played all these different games where the idea is to kill the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't see the gore, but it's still, the idea is to win at all costs. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
There's a human element.
There's a human element to it that 99% of us grew up playing these games, and we all turned out fine. And I'm willing to bet that the same thing will happen with this generation.
Well, we have more research now. Some of them don't. Some of them do. So, you know, it's to kind of answer your question, Jennifer, obviously you didn't really need an answer because you already know all this. You're just frustrated with it. And I hear you. And I, like you, I have days where I'm like, this is just ridiculous. Like, what's on TV and what our children are being exposed to. And at the same time, to go back to what Todd said, it's about locus of control. You know, you have control over this circle. This circle, maybe you have a little bit of influence. This circle, you have no influence. So try not to spend your time on that outer circle because it doesn't help you. Sometimes it is good to have a good release like you just did, mm-hmm. and that's healthy. But you focus your energy on this circle because that does make an impact on the outer circle. We don't think that our lives in our homes are making an impact, but they are because everybody on this call is doing that.
And the unseen ripple.
Exactly. That's why spirituality and faith are such a big part of my experience with my children and with the show. And when I say spirituality and faith, you guys know I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about, I believe in things I can't see. I don't really know how what I'm saying on a podcast is affecting people, but Todd and I believe that it grows something, right? Everyone here is doing the exact same thing. Every experience that you do that's loving, every person you pass that you smile at, it is making an impact. Video games suck. And hopefully someday they go out of style. and we go back to Space Invaders, like, or it gets worse. I don't know, but that's why I started with the human part of the violence and the sex, because it's a part of who we are. It's kind of like denying the darkness that lives in every human. It lives there. Like, why am I going to see Halloween? I haven't seen it yet. Maybe I won't.
Because it's going to stimulate some weird part of your brain that doesn't get stimulated.
It's like riding a roller coaster. Why the hell do we get on a machine that, like, makes us feel like we're going to die? Why do we do that? It's part of the human experience. It's thrilling. It's exciting. Why do we make these choices? And again, are they bad choices? Not necessarily. You know, they're choices.
The other Jennifer said that she's so inspired by Jennifer's fire. So was I, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
I've noticed within myself, when I start thinking about the huge picture, I can get discouraged and give up. So as Todd said, what you do with your family, Jennifer, will make a big difference. So small steps can make huge difference also. She also says, I was strict with screen time, and now my kids say, even though they weren't thrilled at the time, they will do the same with their children. Mm. It will reach out to a bigger circle.
Love.
So, yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's give Jennifer parting thoughts.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Okay, so all that was awesome, and thank you for reminding me that I'm not, like, a crazy person, and for permitting me to go on my diatribe. I think that, so all that is wonderful, and thank you. The circles of control and influence, I try to keep that in my head. I need to print an image of that so I can put it in front of me every day and just remember, like, the Mother Teresa quote, like, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. So that's really helpful. And I think the last bit I'll say is I played video games growing up too. I watched a lot of TV growing up, and I do think ultimately that we'll all be kind of fine.
Yeah.
But I think the huge difference is that we couldn't pick up Atari and put it in our back pocket. The TV shows went off at a certain time. We couldn't carry the whole world in this small machine in our back pocket. And I think that's the part of it. Like I said yesterday, and this is totally inappropriate, but I said to a friend of mine, I was like, I hate Steve Jobs. I know he's dead, but I hate him for inventing this, because I feel like it's become a plague on society. Like, have all the technology, but does it have to fit in our back pocket? So I feel like sometimes, you know, when I'm dealing with things in the school, like our school just enacted, our middle school did it a while ago, but our high school enacted a no cell phone policy. And I was really, really happy, because you can have it, you just cannot take it out except at lunchtime. So I was happy because my son, he's a great kid and he knows not to do it. But last year he spent the entire day on his phone, texting people, watching videos, not really paying attention in class. And he did fine because he's a bright kid, but eventually it's going to catch up to him. And I'm like, there has to be a place where, you know, in school where kids can focus on school. So I was happy about that, but I just feel like, I don't know. I kind of wish that society, and this is my hope, that we one day say things like, all right, after hours of work, we're going to shut our servers down so people can't exchange emails at 9 o'clock at night, because we need to value family time. I feel like there are systems that we can put into technology that can work to our benefit, and that as people, we just have to catch up to it. So I'm trying to have faith that eventually there will be some great people who can invent these things to come to grips with it. You know, whether it's like the whatever that thing is on your phone, you can put in like black and white mode.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that become more normalized. So thank you again for everything. And then I'll ask my other question next time.
Okay. So yeah, I'm totally with you, Jennifer. And I do think things will kind of come back to this kind of weird balance. Not weird balance, but every generation has many things that they have to worry about. Like if you go to the 60s, you got, you know, the Cold War and all our leaders getting assassinated. And you go back into the 40s, you got Hitler, and you go back to the 20s, you got the Great Depression. Like every generation, like we're not special. Like we all have it. And this is one thing that we have to worry about. That's just the way it is. But this is not new. Like the way of the world is that there's challenges and then there's celebrations and it just goes back and forth.
Well, and we got to remember that a lot of times we give the technology so much power. Well, and we'll be like, we're powerless against it. Of course we're not. We're still human beings and we can still personally decide, like Deborah was telling us, and I think this was on the show, that, you know, Silicon Valley has gone back to a black and white screen, and those phones with less on them are more expensive now than the newer phones with all the bells and whistles. So the pendulum is swinging back. We do have more research. We do understand better. And yes, there are going to be some kids who are addicted, and there is a fallout to what we didn't know before. It's not denying that, but it is that we do have choices. Like, you know, we can put our phone down. We do have that capability. Sometimes we'll say, you know, if the technology wasn't here, then everything would be fine. There'd be something else. And that is the yin and yang of life. So anyway.
Real quick, Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
What's up?
So Jennifer, I totally hear where you're coming from because I understand it and I feel it too. I guess it was interesting because I've had this conversation with my daughter who is 18 and off of college now. And she is always talking about how we don't understand it, you know, and that she has grown up with this her whole life. And while she admits to going through times of not being able to control it really well, because she will say, oh my gosh, I got to get off my phone. Like I've been on it too long. You know, she really feels like it's just part of who she, it's an extension of who she is. And yes, there are good and bad things to it, but she's also figuring out herself through it and how to understand it and understand other people through it. And so while I completely agree that there are so many things that can go wrong with it, I feel like there are some good things too. And I do feel like these kids are growing up completely different than I grew up, but she's really also challenged me to try to look at it from her perspective. Mm-hmm. And not that I think you should let them play Fortnite, like that's not what I'm saying, but I think that perspective is important too, of how they are owning it and how we're helping them own it. And I think that that's where we can come into play and challenge them and talk with them about it and set limits if we need to set limits. But I feel like there are good things about it too. And it's easy to get in that cycle of it's just all bad, it's all bad, it's all bad. And we have to take it from their perspective where they're like, no mom, like this is how I relate to my peers. And I need you to understand it so that you can understand me. So that's just my thought.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Liz. And then I guess my last thing is I don't want to speak to anybody other than myself. I am addicted to technology. That's the truth. I'm on my phone a lot. I'm on my computer a lot. And there are times when I project my addiction onto my kids. And if I really want to change the world, I need to start with me changing it myself. Because there's times when I'm like, I should really read a book right now, but instead I'm going to check this or that. And then even the times when I do end up taking the high road and decide to take a walk around the park, I'm secretly hoping that my wife and my three daughters notice that I'm doing that. So it's
ulterior motives.
It's ulterior motives. Like until I can truly own the fact of my role with technology, it's really hard for me to, judge anybody else.
Well, and also, this is kind of going off of what Liz said. Also remember, everybody, I read newspapers on my phone. I listen to music on my phone. I listen to podcasts from my phone, and I don't find any of those things to be bad. So sometimes when I say, oh my gosh, I've had my phone all day, I haven't been looking at a screen all day. I have been listening to things, and it's been what Steve Jobs did, again, not to like make him better, but he put it all in one place, right? And so instead of having a newspaper, my Walkman, I still have my old Walkman, my newspaper, my Walkman, my, you know, my phone somewhere else, it's now all in one place. What we did is we streamlined. With streamlining comes more responsibility, but not constant self-shaming. I read the newspaper on my phone. So I am reading. So like when Todd's like, oh, I'm on my phone, but I am reading. And he's not, I'm not, he never gets on my case because he's probably on his phone more than I'm on.
Whoa.
But I can't get in the car without my phone because my Bluetooth is connected to my car and that's how I listen to my music. We've narrowed things down.
You know
down.
What's funny? Like as we're talking about this, I'm looking at, do you guys see what that is?
What are you pointing to, love?
The radio.
Oh yeah. That's my grandpa's. That's my Aunt Peg's dad's radio.
I don't know if you guys could see that radio, but that's just I just think it's funny that we're having this conversation and I've been staring at that radio from 19 whatever.
That was in my grandpa's basement. And then when my grandparents passed away, when they moved out of that house, I wanted that really
bad. For those of you guys listening, it's the kind of radio that's like, I don't know, 4 feet tall and 2 feet wide and a foot deep. It's, and it probably had like three stations.
And my mom always talks about when she sees it, when she comes over here, she's like, I would lay down and color and listen to the show.
And everybody would gather around the radio.
Yeah.
See, so I'm going the other way. I like have
Wait, Peg is saying something. What is she saying?
Hold on.
What are you saying, Peg?
She didn't do that.
She didn't,
she
do,
didn't
that?
Do that?
She making that up. My mom, she wants to tell a story.
there's a part of me that longs, like, you know, on Sirius XM, you get 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s.
Uh-huh.
I love the 40s.
The 40s are back, by the way. They're just not
I know,
the
they're on a different mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I still don't know if I believe in previous lives, but if I do, I think I somehow was connected in the 40s because I just have this, it just makes me feel whole. When I listen to 40s music.
I think you're from the 40s.
Do you?
You definitely had a previous life in the 40s. There's parts of you that's really old school.
Brother Kent has something to offer. Hold on. Hold on. I got to unmute you and it's not working.
Unmute. There it goes.
Okay, you're on.
Is that good? So, yeah, I just, in thinking, and Jennifer, thanks for sharing it. And I also appreciate your passion for it and feel your frustration. And I'll lead off by saying, I totally respect and understand your decision on Fortnite, and I think it's really cool that you're standing by it because it's got to be hard because I see it too. I have a son, and I have literally in my house I have multiple TVs and I've had multiple Fortnite boxes with like six boys here playing it. So, mm-hmm. and so that obviously tells you I allow them to play it. But I just had some thoughts on it, and two thoughts that came to me. One to kind of echo off what Todd said, which is, we have played games where people kill each other, I think, and as a male anyway, you know, for all the time I can remember. I agree, and you referenced two other games, I don't even remember the name, Grand Theft Auto or whatever. Mm. I think those games are really gory and really show, you know, the death and the pain. And one difference with Fortnite, again, maybe I'm splitting hairs, but one difference is they don't show that. When somebody dies, they just turn a color and then they go away. So whether that matters, I don't know. Just was the thought that came up. And again, that's not a judgment on your decision because I completely respect it. The second piece is, and I took it from this, that it's just ironic to me that's in an interesting, because one of the things that Kathy and Todd have said that I've tried to take is be where my kids are. Mm-hmm. So guess what I do on those days when they're playing Fortnite? I sit with them and I talk to them about Fortnite.
Yeah.
I don't play. I'm so bad I couldn't do that. But I talk to them like, what is this? What is it? And they engage me. And now is that, so it's just an interesting thing to think about. And that doesn't work for your family and I get it. But, and I'm also thinking about like, what should my rules be given what, you know, everything that's been said, but I was just saying that that's where I went with it. So I've learned about the game by doing that, not by playing because I really don't have interest, but just by like, why are you doing that? What's that in your hand? All these other things, skins and all this other stuff. So anyway, I just wanted to share that it was an interesting way that, and I mean, I guess the last thing I'd say is I think it's complicated. I mean, we've brought up some really big picture issues here with technology and violence and all these other things. So it's a really hard, complicated thing. And I think it's great that you've taken your position and that's what works for your family. But I also understand the frustration with it. So
thank you, Scott. It reminds me of what Duffy said at the conference last year. And just to, you know, there was one mom that stood up and said, my kid just,
plays
I can't
this
connect,
game.
Just
yeah.
plays this game, whatever game they were talking about. I don't know.
It was Fortnite.
Whatever. And Duffy said,
play with them,
you know, like, and you know, I don't know. It's weird because the fact that they did remove a lot of the gore and the raunchiness out of some of these games, and they kind of like, I don't know, cleaned it up a little bit.
So in a way, because I know, cause I used to play, I used to have to know a lot about Grand Theft Auto, before, because that was some of the things I was teaching was that kind of awareness around that game. And as you guys know, in Grand Theft Auto, not only would you kill people and it'd be gory, but you'd chop them up with machetes and then you'd rape women and then you'd urinate on people, just to kind of give you an idea of what happens in Grand Theft Auto. And that's not the game anymore. Mm-hmm. So in a way, that's a pendulum swinging back, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So like Fortnite, I've never played, but you know, going off what Scott said, if they are just disintegrating, which again, it's still not good. It's not about now it's good. We got to live in that gray area of it. Is it getting better? Is that a demonstration of it's getting better? And they're still, you know, that something like Grand Theft Auto is going out of vogue a little bit. You know, it's kind of like that's people finally stood up.
This is probably taken the, because Grand Theft Auto at one point probably was
the best-selling
game. And now Fortnite has buried all records. And in a way, I think that while Fortnite is not better than Mr. Rogers or taking a walk out in the park,
it's
certainly better than Grand Theft Auto. So it's one of those things like, through what lens are you going to look at the world through? And there's times when I'm like frustrated and I don't want to look at the good, through the good lens. Just let me be pissed. And I want, Kathy and I want to create the space for you to be pissed, but at the same time.
You are, you know, just to like give you feedback, Jennifer, you are already using this fire in such a good way. I know how involved you are in the school and I know how much you already participate in making sure your community gets good education and knowledge. So you use the anger, you use the fire for everybody here who I think everybody deals with technology in a different way, but when you are angry about something, obviously it means a boundary has been crossed for you. And then the question is, how do I use it? And I think that's what Jennifer and Scott and everybody is saying is like, I like seeing people get fiery. The things that piss me off are the things I write about, talk about, and we bring on the show. You know, if you guys have noticed lately, it's been a lot about stuff with women where I'm just annoyed about, you know, what I'm seeing in the news. And that's when it crosses my boundary, I know it's time to talk about it. Not because everyone's going to agree with me, but because that's how we create change. So, okay, let's go to the next.
Did you see the email I sent today to the library?
Yes. I Am Evidence.
There's a documentary called I Am Evidence, and it's all about the, you know, the
amount of rape kits.
Numerous amount of rape kits that are just sitting on shelves collecting dust. And I haven't seen the movie yet, but it looks pretty powerful. It's the lady,
Mariska Hargitay.
Yeah.
She is the executive producer.
Is she a Law and Order lady or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a
so
Law
anyways,
Order.
We might bring, and it's $90 for the library to bring it in. So
that's
cheap. I emailed the library to see if they wanted to kind of do it with us. So we'll see. But anyways.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. Well, one is from Kim.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find it. And
just as far as time, because I know we're getting close, I did say I would say something about the boundaries thing that Lauren had written. I told her I would finish that up.
Let's jump into that.
So on Facebook, there was a question that Lauren asked around a family member that is toxic, who deals with some addiction issues, mental wellness issues, and she is finding that she wants to not be with him as much so she can dedicate her energy to her own family, and that she's finding that she feels that he's taking up too much of her time and energy and she wants to start creating boundaries with him. And again, that's just the synopsis of it. But obviously I think that a lot of people on these calls in Team Zen have these issues where creating boundaries is absolutely necessary, and that my suggestion initially on the Facebook page was that a lot of times boundaries are less about telling this person, I'm setting a boundary, I'm not going to see you anymore. And it's more about small incremental steps. That a lot of times when we realize someone is toxic or an energy vampire, or we just feel like crap whenever we're around them, it's not about saying to them, I feel like crap around you, goodbye, which isn't really the most human and compassionate thing to do. It's instead around, you know, taking back our time, as Maxine Waters would say. It's about saying when the next time they call and say, I really want to talk on the phone, you say, you know what, I really don't have time to talk on the phone, but go ahead and text me. And if I can help, I will. Or I really want to go to coffee so I can tell you all these things that are going on. And then this person that Lauren happened to be talking about, he was a family member. So instead saying, you know what, I really can't do coffee this week because of things going on with my family, but I'll see you at the next family event. So it's not, and again, that person may say, oh, you're blowing me off, and maybe they'll read into it and you can say, well, you know what? I'm sorry that you feel that way. But you really, my point is it's less about telling everyone that you're creating boundaries and more about the practice and the action of creating boundaries. It doesn't need to be a big declaration of like, my boundary is set, you can never cross it. It's more about just making choices.
It's an internal decision.
It's an internal decision and then an external action. You shift it. And I thought it became a really interesting conversation because a lot of people had really good feedback. And Ed, who's on Team Zen, commented, he said, you know what? I have a family member, a brother who had all these issues. And I said, goodbye. I am going to spend more time with my wife and children. And he said, and I had to cut ties. And I honor that. Like, there are people that it's not about slow incremental. It's about, this is so toxic or harmful, I have to make a decision. And I respect that. Like, that's not wrong. And my way is not wrong or right. It is, you have to, like, you know, as I've said, in Todd and my situation, we've had friends and we've had family members where there is toxicity. But disconnecting for us would be more harmful for us and for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. But we've also had experiences. I'm trying to think, have we ever had to completely disconnect from somebody?
No, we just temporary boundaries.
Temporary boundaries. Yeah. But there are people that I have created incremental boundaries around over time that I really don't see them anymore because it's been kind of set into motion. So my point in saying that to you and what I wanted to, you know, bring full circle with Lauren is that she's the only one who knows is like what. There are so many logistical things and familial things. Like if this family member has children that she's connected to and she doesn't want to lose touch with them, maybe losing touch with their dad isn't going to work, but she can create boundaries with their dad. Do you see what I mean? It's all very personal.
Well, and there's no right answer for any, you know, we can't make any rule like, oh, this is how you do it because every situation is different. What I like, and Kathy kind of mentioned this, is that there's some, you know, I don't want to say conflicting advice on this thread, but there's different perspectives.
It's actually not conflictual. It's different experiences, right?
Right. Well, it's just, you know, it took Ed to kind of say, hey, why don't you just do this?
Yeah.
And then, but he spoke about it in a very thoughtful way.
Yeah, he did.
And then Dave actually had a really good response. So I invite you, I just tried to copy and paste the entire thread into the chat, but I couldn't. But go to the Facebook page because it's really interesting about boundaries. And then I even put two podcasts that Kathy and I have done about boundaries at some point. So, and this is something like a universal thing that I think most of us struggle with.
It is. And you know, on this Team Zen and emails I get from moms and dads all the time, I've been talking to a certain mom about this a lot. What if you were married to somebody who was toxic and they are the parent of your children?
You can't disconnect from them.
And there's a way that we have to figure out how to create boundaries and still stay connected because our children connect us. Like we're never going to be completely severed from this person. And so it's like, how do we, and that's different because those do involve our own children and we have to be able to negotiate with that person, especially when our kids are little. But there's so many different experiences with this. The truth, though, is we just have to find a way where we can feel like, you know, one of my favorite prayers that I maybe have shared with you guys, but what I say to myself in the morning or ask for help with is help me to honor myself so then I can honor the world. Why that's such an important prayer for me is because I think I used to go around saying, I just need to be of service all the time. I need to be of service. And I lose myself in the process. And I feel like honor myself first means how do I create boundaries? How do I make sure I take care of myself so then I can go out and honor the world? Honoring the world doesn't mean I'm going to sacrifice myself. And that's got a big, that has to do with boundaries. Like that's like the first step is what do I believe about who I am and what I'm going to do for myself first. So again, I don't know if that helps, Lauren. But
Scott asked about the podcast numbers that we did. One was called Setting Boundaries with Love, and that is podcast number...
We'll send it in the email, too, Scott.
Yeah, it'll be there. Yeah. And then the other one is called Families Are a Tyranny Run by Their Sickest Member, which
whose quote was that?
I don't know, but that pretty much... Talk about encapsulating a truth.
It is. There are certain people in our families who we walk on eggshells around, and everything is around how do we not piss this person off? Mm-hmm. How do we make sure this person feels heard and seen? Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that we don't say this in a way that this person feels left out? And some of us have more than one, you know, it's not just one, it's several. But even just acknowledging that you're not alone in that, that we all kind of have to tiptoe around certain people in different situations.
So it's 12:55.
Okay. Do we have one more that we can answer, or well, should we? There,
it's a kind of a long one. So I don't know if we're going to be able to do it with. I don't know.
Is there a new one, or are those all the old ones?
No, I mean, this is something new from this morning.
Okay. Just do it. We'll do our best.
All right. It's going to be maybe.
If you guys have to get off, go ahead.
Reader's Digest version. How can I help my children when it comes to social interactions? I've been struggling with a lot of anxiety regarding my boys having friends. They have friends, but I feel like they don't feel comfortable with their friends at times. This is more specific for my middle child, who's in fourth grade, but now more recently with my sixth grader, who just started middle school. I've also recently become aware that a lot of my anxiety stems from me not wanting my children to have the same experience that I did as a child. I did not ever have a core set of friends growing up. I still don't, as I was a very sheltered child and was even somewhat discouraged by my parents from having close friends. I realized that I have been overly concerned at times, even projecting my fears onto my kids when they don't seem to be included by their peers. I've also realized that most of my anxiety is from me not being included by said friends' moms, as they are all friends and I'm usually left out too. So back to my question, how do I know when an issue is mine, when it's my kids, and when it's my kids, what can I do to help? So anyways.
It's always yours.
It's always yours.
Yeah.
It's always ours.
Yeah, because that's the only way we see the world is through our own lens. You're wearing a pair of glasses that say, I feel uncomfortable with my social situations. And so that's how I see my children's social situations. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that as a criticism.
So yeah, the bad news is it's always ours.
Yeah, it's always
ours. The good news is she already has this awareness.
You already got it. Yeah.
I've also recently become aware that a lot of my anxiety stems from me not wanting my children to have the same. Like, you know it.
You already know.
Which is not the whole battle. You still got some work to do. But my gosh, most people are blind to their role in a situation. And I think it's Melanie. Mm-hmm. I think that's her name.
Melanie.
She is halfway home.
And also remember, we romanticize things. We think to ourselves, if I had a best friend, they would never hurt me. I would never feel uncomfortable around them. If my friends really loved me, they would never exclude me. They would never make me feel uncomfortable. Baloney. We're talking about human beings. Sometimes our best friends hurt us. Sometimes our group of friends forget to ask us. Sometimes our friend gives us a bad present for our birthday. Sometimes Todd forgets something.
That's just a blatant
and
lie.
And the idea that because we have a group of friends that they're never going to make us feel bad and that it's some kind of teenage book that we read from, of course human beings, you know, some your fourth grader doesn't feel comfortable around her friends or his friends sometimes. Correct.
I don't feel comfortable around my friends sometimes.
Yeah, like most of the time it's fine and I'm not thinking about it. And then sometimes there's awkward silences and we're human beings.
So here's your job. Your job is to not to fix your kid's friend situation.
Your job is
to normalize it and support him mm-hmm. and not like, oh, what can I do to help? Or how are you feel like?
Or that you need to find new friends.
Yeah.
Just, not the case. Yeah.
So that's your job. So anyways, Jennifer says that there's two podcasts she mentioned that'll be in the show notes as well. One is IRL podcast
in real life.
I don't know. Yeah. She's nodding. Yes. And then the other is the longest, shortest time, podcast episode, Mr. Rogers. So anyways, that's it. Let's see. What is our next, Zen talk going to be? Let me look at my calendar here.
Oh, I posted this on, Zen Parenting today and you guys may have seen it if you follow Glennon, but Glennon's book, Love Warrior, is being turned into a movie that Oprah is going to produce. So congratulations to Glennon Doyle. And I'm curious how that will be. And she just was posting today wondering who should play her in the movie. So if you guys have any ideas, go on her page and post it.
Yeah.
So if you don't have your tickets to the conference, get your tickets.
Not many spots left for your pre-conference workshop.
My pre-conference workshop, I think there's like 7 or something like that, 7 spots.
And if you're signed up and you're thinking about bringing your fella, I like using the word fella.
Yeah.
It reminds me.
That's your 40s.
Pulp Fiction.
Hey, fella.
Yeah.
You should wear like a hat.
Remember that part in Pulp Fiction where John Travolta and Uma Thurman are about to dance uh-huh. the twist or mm-hmm. whatever it was, the Batman dance?
It's not a Batman dance.
What is it?
I guess they did this, but I don't think they
What's
did
the song?
Batman. It was a folks wished you well.
Anybody know that?
C'est la vie, c'est la vie.
Put it in the chat box because
You Never Can Tell?
Maybe.
Do I have the right song?
Alexa, Can you play Never Can Tell?
That's not it. That's not what it's called. Never Can
Tell. Oh!
These people may have to go. This is it! I'm good! We got it. But it's not a Batman dance.
This is the Batman. What else do they do?
I don't know. But we gotta go.
Hold on. Alexa, stop. Alexa, can you play?
Oh my gosh.
Alexa.
Look, it's 12. Oh, it's 101.
Alexa, can you play that? Oh. Alexa! Can you play the Halloween theme?
Alexa.
Stop. Do not interrupt Alexa. My gosh. Alexa.
This is us in the morning.
Can you play the Halloween theme?
Oh. I'm not sure.
Alexa, can you play the Halloween theme?
Halloween theme by John Carpenter, starting now on Amazon Music.
All right, I know. I'm going to go.
Here he comes, walking slowly. How does he catch anybody? I don't get it.
He creeps up on them.
He doesn't creep. Just walk the other way fast. If you're a speed walker, you're going to be fine.
They don't know he's coming. He's sneaky.
But they're running away. How does he catch them?
They're not running away. He sneaks.
You're telling
up
me
on
if we
them.
Looked at Halloween, there's nobody ever running
he
away.
He gets them in a room, and they're in the room, and there's nowhere to go.
What about through the door?
Michael Myers. I'm going to post some Michael Myers things that I have. They're not scary.
Alexa.
They're funny.
Stop it.
I'm so afraid of him. My friends send me funny things of like Michael Myers at work every day, like in his mask, like drinking coffee and stuff like that. It's funny stuff. Okay.
Next Zen Talk is going to be Friday, September 28th. Stay on the Facebook page. Catch you guys later. Keep trucking.
All right. Love you all.
Bye-bye.
Good. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Woo!
Stop recording.